Chapter 2. Lead Us Not into Temptation. Summary. Previously on Epistaxis Anime. Warily, Foggy turned to Matt. This doesn't happen often, does it? No, not very, Matt answered. And even if in the moment it wasn't technically a lie, he had a bad feeling it might turn out to be. Matt can't catch a break. Not very. Christ, the lack of foresight on that one. Or perhaps it had been wishful thinking, but no matter which was the case, it didn't change the fact that Matt had turned out to be very, very wrong. His nose hadn't known a moment's peace since he'd met Foggy. Like clockwork. If only the clock broke down in a spectacular and bloody fashion at least once per day, Matt's safeguards failed him. He was forced to reckon with the knowledge that theoretical kitten lives simply weren't enough to balance out the scales. Matt's unseemly lust for his roommate weighed too heavily and completely, although Foggy, blissfully unaware of the details, bore it like a champ. So did the set of Tide pens Foggy had come back with from the corner store one afternoon. They were surprisingly helpful, even if Matt went through a whole pack in the same time it would take a mother with quintuplet toddlers to use up a single pen. But they weren't the only tools Foggy had assembled for Matt. Nearly every trip he took, he apparently had his eyes out for useful items, amassing oddities with which to present Matt the second he'd crossed the threshold back into their dorm. A few weeks into the semester, and Matt already had the most impressively nosebleed-oriented first aid and cleaning kit Columbia University housing had ever seen. Unfortunately, he also had, while not quite record-breaking in the same way, worked up quite an awful case of anemia. But this was just another challenge for Foggy. When he showed up bearing cold cuts from Nelson's meats the day after Matt's blood test results had come back, Matt was surprised to realize he wasn't surprised at all. His roommate had a real caretaker streak. And Matt was grateful, really. He was, so long as he didn't think too hard about it. When he did, though, think about it, it somehow didn't seem ethical to accept so much help from the unknowing source of his nosebleeds. He felt dirty in a way that had little to do with the blood. But that was only when Foggy wasn't distracting him with wisecracks about working on a second degree in nursing or doing things to cause Matt's nose further grief. Matt curled up in embarrassment on his bed after one of the latter such incidents, nearly suffocating himself with his face smushed into his pillow and feeling miserable. It was one thing to leak blood all over the confines of their room, even if that still entailed dismaying revelations about the sorts of things that were linked to Matt's sex drive. Like, for instance, the way Foggy moved methodically through his Punjabi vocab list, with what Matt knew in his heart to be the worst accent of anyone on campus learning any language. It was cute, okay? So sue him, but good luck winning the case once he passed the bar. It was another thing, though, now that his nosebleeds had made their way into the public arena. Matt shuddered as he relived the moment for the 10th time since he'd holed up in his room immediately afterward. They'd been running debates in class, which in itself wasn't remarkable until you factored in Foggy as the one going up against Marcy Stahl, a real spitfire of a debater and near impossible at best. Foggy had been sweating bullets in the hours before class. Matt had registered 3 wordless changes of his shirt, and at least a dozen of the signature pops that coincided with the uncapping of his deodorant. So you'd forgive Matt if he hadn't exactly been expecting Foggy to step up to his podium and absolutely crush it. You might forgive him also if Foggy's command of fact and reasoning triggered a little something in his nose. The way Foggy exposed the fine cracks in Marcy's argument, chipping calmly away at them till they had become something more, was nothing short of spine-tingling. Which would have been fine, probably, if only the spine weren't connected to so many nerves in the body, whose job it was to spread that tingle to other places. Every weighted syllable, every precise tap of Foggy's note cards against the podium wood, sent an electric pulse surging through him. The current split into two, one heading downwards, and the other fast-tracking it to the capillaries in his septum. Matt gripped the back of his chair, the plastic rod digging into the fleshy parts of his fingers, as he twisted down and away from the view of the front of the class. The last thing he needed was to cause Foggy to flounder when he was doing so well. He could envision it now, Foggy lunging out from behind his podium to sprint action movie style toward Matt with a handkerchief he'd whipped out from some hidden pocket and a whole lot of heroism. He'd be lying if he said that something about that wasn't strangely appealing. But in the end, reality won out over the fantasy, and so he groped around inside his back pocket for the tissues he'd taken to carrying around just in case something like this happened. He was congratulating himself on being so prepared, a tissue already halfway to his nose to staunch the flow, when three things happened in quick succession to negate any sliver of triumph he'd had the nerve to feel. Diagonally behind him, from a position with what Matt guessed was a clean line of sight to the grisly drama playing out on his face, his classmate Stacy whispered to her companion, "Oh shit, look, Murdoch's got a nosebleed." An observation which on its own should have been innocuous enough. Regrettably, however, through some absurd aligning of fates, Brock, the guy Stacy pointed him out to, happened to suffer from the kind of aversion to blood that ended with him fainting out of his chair and onto the floor. As he slumped down onto the carpeting with a deceptively light plop, Stacy screamed. And well, under the right circumstances, screams were contagious. Soon half the class was contributing to the hubbub with some noise or other. Half of those crowded around Brock, and the remaining, more observant number shrank back from Matt. He might have been offended had he not been able to feel the volume of his nosebleed increasing with every passing second, likely aggravated by the compounding stress of the situation. His small packet of tissues was an open sluice gate where there needed to be a dam. He was ill-equipped to stop or even slow down the deluge. His classmates' disconcerted murmurs surged toward him like a wave, confirming everything he'd ever thought about himself in the context of his disease. Gross. Jesus, no wonder Brock is out cold. I didn't think there was that much blood in the human body. You don't think that's, like, something you can catch or anything, do you? Are we standing too close? Should somebody call an ambulance? Matt huddled into himself, surrendering to a sudden whimsy that told him making himself smaller was the first step to disappearing altogether. He angled his face into his shoulder, effectively converting his shirt into a giant napkin. The blood had to go somewhere. Just when it seemed as though he were doomed to live out the rest of his life like this, gawked at and left to bleed out without intervention, he heard a voice. "All right, guys, give him some space," their professor said, in the same even-tempered tone he used to deliver his lectures. If Matt had had the wherewithal, he would have rolled his eyes at the idea that his classmates were giving him anything but space, as repulsed as they seemed. As it were, he didn't have it in him to bother. Matt felt a hand descend on his head. He had a sneaking suspicion that Professor Higgins had chosen that location precisely because it was the only spot on him guaranteed to be clean. Everything south of it was fair game as far as his fickle illness was concerned, though, so he supposed he couldn't blame him. "Stacy, will you get Brock some water for when he comes to?" Higgins said, before addressing Matt. "Matthew, does this happen often? Do you have something you usually do to make it stop?" Matt was still formulating his answer, not having gotten much further than an unuttered and half-joking "pray," when a loud pull on a zipper announced Foggy's presence behind him. "Professor, if you'll let me... I'm his roommate, so I've seen this before, and I think I can help." Foggy removed a box from his backpack to several Snickers from the onlookers. "Won't those be too big?" a girl muttered, and Matt felt his intrigue grow. Higgins stepped aside to let Foggy in, who kneeled down, Matt hoped, on the periphery of Matt's blood puddle. He transferred Matt a compact, though frayed like it had been cut down the middle, piece of cylindrical cotton. "Stick this up your nose," he instructed. Matt did as he was told and inserted it into his left nostril. Foggy passed him another, and once that one was in the other side, he asked, his voice woefully nasal, "What are these?" "Tampons," Foggy answered jovially. "I cut them up so they'd be the right size, but they should absorb a good bit of what you throw at them." Matt flinched through his thank you, the cotton tube's gradual expansion inside his nostrils proving to be more than a little unsettling. From where they stood arranged in a loose ring around him, the other students let out a collective sigh of relief that the tampons had plugged him up for the time being. All except for one, Marcy, whose lavender-scented hand lotion Matt had clocked following Foggy over from the front of the classroom when his nasal passages were still less obstructed, laid her focus elsewhere. "Well, that was resourceful," she observed, and while Matt was inclined to agree with her that Foggy was amazing, fit to be a Boy Scout, and just otherwise sensational, the spark of jealousy that flared in his stomach didn't allow him to get too comfortable with her assessment. "Yes, well done," Higgins said, and he adjourned the class a generous 5 minutes early to afford Matt and Brock, who had finally come back around, the chance to recuperate. And of course, to grant the other students unofficial permission to gossip freely out of earshot of their subject. Naturally, the distance didn't help Matt, but he blocked out their chitter-chatter as best he could during his walk back toward the dorm with Foggy. Outside the door, Foggy apologized about having to leave him there while he booked it to Punjabi, so Matt headed inside alone, bloody tampons still stuck up his nose, and a pervasive sense of shame bound up there with them. Matt hugged the box of tampons Foggy had left in his charge and closed his eyes, burrowing his face deeper into his pillow. Of all the moments to have caused a scene, it had to have been during Foggy's debate, when he'd been winning. And still, Foggy had rushed to his aid. Even if Matt wasn't such a coward, and had been content to risk his and Foggy's roommate equilibrium by asking him out, the idea that Matt was in any way worthy of Foggy's affection was laughable. He didn't contribute anything to their friendship. All he did was take, 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 with every drop of blood that had to be contained or cleaned up. Matt was so deep in his bout of self-pity that he didn't notice Foggy until he rattled the doorknob, turning it. Hastily, he placed the tampons on his nightstand and sat up. It wouldn't do if Foggy knew that he'd been cradling them for the past hour and a half, like they were some sort of stuffed animal Foggy had won him at a fair. "Feeling any better?" Foggy asked, kicking the door closed again since his hands were occupied. He brandished two styrofoam cups of chai that Matt, nose tampons long removed, identified by their notes of cardamom and cinnamon before Foggy could announce what they were. "I brought you some chai," Matt finished for him, sitting up. Foggy passed him one of the cups, saying, "It's impressive how well your nose still works, considering." He gestured towards Matt's face. Matt snorted lightly over the top of his chai. "You may have a point," he conceded. The mattress springs squeaked as Foggy sat down next to Matt. "You know, I think we might have to revisit that debate about whose bed is least comfortable," he commented. He blew on his drink, but instead of raising it to his lips afterward, he lowered it again. "But seriously, you never answered. Are you doing okay after all that?" "Well, it's always been a dream of mine to make someone swoon at the sight of me," Matt quipped, then took a too big sip of his tea to avoid having to say anything beyond that. "Hey," Foggy said, a smile shining through his voice. "A job well done, then. And you know, honestly, Brock kind of needed to be taken down a peg anyway after last week in ethics." Foggy was referring to Brock's insistence that their professor had missed a detail written in one of the assigned readings footnotes. In actuality, it had been Brock who'd misread, and he hadn't taken that discovery gracefully. "I sort of wish I'd been up against him in the debate," he grumbled. I don't know. Watching you go up against Marcy was pretty great. Your arguments were flawless, Foggy. She never stood a chance. If only Matt could tell Foggy how profoundly his debate skills had affected him. And more than that, how profoundly his everything affected him. Somewhere in between all the blood loss, Matt had tipped clumsily into a crush and, as early in their friendship as it might be, Foggy's gravitational pull was only encouraging him to fall deeper. Foggy rubbed the back of his neck. Guess all that cramming I did last night paid off, huh? I couldn't imagine ever going up against her unprepared. She's tough, to say the least. Matt tightened his grip on his cup, and the styrofoam crackled under his fingertips. He felt a guilty twinge. Did you see whether Higgins marked you down as winning or not before? No idea. Marcy was only halfway through her closing remarks when the screaming started, and I didn't actually get to mine, so who knows whether he thinks it's even fair to choose a winner. Foggy shrugged. Foggy, I'm sorry, Something hard and pointy found its way into Matt's ribcage. Ow, did you just elbow me? He said, tucking his arm down against his side as protection against further attacks. Somebody had to do it, Foggy said, before taking a long drag of his drink. Matt waited patiently for an explanation, eyebrow quirk. You apologize too much about things that are out of your control, dude. Consider your nosebleeds to be get-out-of-jail-free cards. It's not like you were sitting in your seat like, hell yeah, I'm going to give myself a nosebleed right now just to fuck with Foggy's debate. Foggy paused for dramatic effect. Unless, of course, that was exactly what you were doing. In which case, fess up, you saboteur. Matt held up the hand unoccupied by his cup in a display of innocence. I did no such thing, Your Honor, he pledged. Are you sure you weren't feeling your position in class threatened by this up-and-comer? Foggy grilled him playfully, leaning in closer. Matt giggled, swept up in the euphoria that accompanied moments like this with Foggy. Moments where life wasn't so serious and his heart beat a little faster with the rush. Matt listened to his heart thudding away in his ears, so in tune with his own happiness that was a small shock to him when he realized his wasn't the only heartbeat to tick up. He breathed out slowly, the air refracting back at him from Foggy's face, which was close. He felt himself flush. He felt an honest-to-God jet of steam that would be imperceptible to anyone but himself rising from beneath his shirt collar. He thought Foggy might kiss him. Foggy swallowed. You know, he said, pulling back. I'm sorry, because I know this is a total invasion of privacy, but I spent some time on WebMD. Matt drew back too, berating himself for having entertained what was so clearly a fanciful notion. Foggy didn't return Matt's feelings. Wordlessly, he reached for a tissue to wipe away the blood that had started, and after Foggy's statement stopped, to pool at the base of his nostril. I'm sure you've been down the rabbit hole too at some point, but I found something really interesting. Matt had been scolded by enough nuns to know things like this didn't align with the true purpose of prayer, but he prayed all the same that Foggy wouldn't say what he feared he was about to. Perhaps it was too short notice for God, because Foggy said anyway, did you know that there's this disease that makes people's noses bleed when they're horny? Epistaxis anime. A wave of lightheadedness overtook Matt as he listened, unsure how to react to Foggy's query. If Foggy missed Matt's response, though, he didn't say anything, only continuing, really rare, supposedly. Like, known cases in the U.S. are in the double digits rare. Matt forced a laugh that sounded wooden even to his own ears. That's crazy, but I don't have that. Yeah, no, right. I only thought about it again because if anything was to make someone so horny all their blood decided to jump ship, hearing Marcy Stahl drop that tidbit about Penal Law 240.35 would be it, Foggy joked, then emptied his cup. Because clarifying this was suddenly indescribably important, more important than throwing Foggy off the scent entirely, even, Matt said, if Marcy was their type, sure, but she's not mine. He tracked the sigh escape Foggy, and his roommate relaxed enough that their shoulders touched. Matt almost melted into it before he made the connection. If Foggy had been carrying some sort of worry about whether Matt was attracted to Marcy, there was only one conclusion to be drawn. Foggy had a thing for Marcy, and he wanted to be sure he wouldn't be stepping on any toes were he to make a move. "Okay, well," Foggy said, "oddball diseases aside, I still think maybe you should get checked out. I'm not an expert, obviously, but your nosebleeds seem a lot more intense than anybody else's I've ever seen." Matt took another sip of chai to buy himself more time to settle on a reply. He could lie and say he'd ask about it next time he was at health services to monitor his anemia and face the same problem a couple months from now. Or he could tell another lie, one more final but perhaps less kind. There had been another disease that caused nosebleeds of similar frequency and severity he'd been tested for as a child. All he had to do was give Foggy the name of that one, and he was sure Foggy would forget that epistaxis anemia had ever been an option. It was tempting, and Matt had only ever had a devil on his shoulder. "I didn't want to say anything," he began. It was a relief to start, at least, with the truth. "I actually do have a diagnosis. Epistaxis mortis." Foggy sucked in a sharp breath at the name. He really had done his homework, whereas Matt's memory of the exact symptoms was hazy. "Matt," he said, his voice tinged with enough concern that Matt regretted his dishonesty almost instantly. What had he gotten himself into? "It's okay, really." Already a seasoned pro in the field of his friend's stubbornness, Foggy dismissed Matt's attempt to downplay his new illness with a meaningful prod to his shoulder. "If I can do anything to help, figure out if I'm a bone marrow match or anything, just let me know and I'll do it," he said resolutely. Matt opened and closed his mouth a few times, like a goldfish in speechless acknowledgement of Foggy's offer. He was floored by Foggy's selflessness and how it contrasted with his own self-serving lie. Every second he spent in Foggy's company, Matt felt like he was learning something about being human. It was too bad he didn't seem to be able to make good on Foggy's teachings. Finally, confronted by his own inadequacy, Matt did all he could think to do, which was pull Foggy into a hug and mumble, "Thanks, Foggy," into his hair. End chapter 2.